Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. After Russia missed a midnight Tuesday deadline to offer an explanation for the poisoning of a former Russian double agent in Britain, the British government Wednesday expelled nearly two dozen Russian diplomats. Prime Minister Theresa May, addressing Parliament, said no defense was offered as to why they lost control of a deadly nerve agent used in the March 4th attack.
No explanation as to how this agent came to be used in the United Kingdom. No explanation as to why Russia has an undeclared chemical weapons program in contravention of international law.
The Prime Minister again said this constituted an unlawful use of force by the Russian state against the United Kingdom, requiring a response.
Under the Vienna Convention, the United Kingdom will now expel 23 Russian diplomats who have been identified as undeclared intelligence officers. They have just 1 week to leave.
The Kremlin has denied any involvement in the case of Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia, who both remain in critical condition. Russian Foreign Ministry spokesperson Maria Zakharova called the British action a political and propaganda show and constitutes an attack on Russia. Moscow has promised a swift retaliation. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari met Wednesday with the parents of dozens of abducted schoolgirls to discuss the search for their whereabouts following the mass kidnapping by suspected Boko Haram insurgents February 19th. He said he's directed the Army, Air Force, police, and all state services to find the girls wherever they are. The attack on Dabshi in Yobe State was the boldest mass abduction since more than 200 schoolgirls were taken in the town of Chibok in northeast Borno State in 2014. This is VOA News. In Syria, Turkish-backed forces shelled the Kurdish-held northwest town of Afrin Wednesday, killing at least seven people. The YPG Kurds are being targeted as a threat to Turkish security. To the south, the eastern suburbs of Damascus, known as Eastern Ghouta, the Syrian Arab Red Crescent is hoping to send in a truck convoy of food and medical aid to the rebel-held enclave, which has been bombarded for 3 weeks by Russian-backed government forces. As the conflict enters its eighth year, Jan Egeland, a UN senior advisor and head of the Norwegian Refugee Council, warned of impending new battles.
Our fear is that after Eastern Ghouta, we may see tremendous battles now in and around Idlib and in the south, Dara. Idlib would be a tremendous concern because Idlib is in many ways a gigantic refugee camp. It's 2.5 million people in Idlib. More than half of these are internally displaced.
A trickle of medical evacuations was completed from Eastern Ghouta Tuesday. More departed Wednesday. The UN said more than 1,000 are in need of evacuation. More than 1,200 have died in the violence since February 18th. In Pakistan, a motorcycle-borne suicide bomb blast claimed by the Taliban ripped through a police checkpoint near Lahore Wednesday, killing at least nine people and wounding nearly 20. The top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, General John Nicholson, Wednesday said the capital, Kabul, now is the main focus of an intensified U.S.-backed battle against the Taliban.
Hard in Kabul to protect the people of Kabul and the international community that are here because of the strategic impact that has and the importance to the campaign.
Nicholson pointed to the rapid growth of the city that's making it harder to secure. He said there is a lot of work to do. In the past year, insurgents have staged massive bombing attacks that have killed hundreds. The Slovenian Prime Minister resigned Wednesday following the Supreme Court's ruling to annul the result of a major September referendum approving a new railway project. Miro Cerar, who has been under pressure from unions for higher wages, sent his resignation to Parliament and will formally inform the President on Thursday. Television host and economic analyst Larry Kudlow replaced Gary Cohn as President Donald Trump's top economic advisor. Kudlow served as an economic advisor to former President Ronald Reagan in the 1980s. He's a veteran of Wall Street and considered both a supply-side economics advocate and a promoter of free trade. Meanwhile, the announcement came as the Trump administration launched a challenge to Indian export practices in the World Trade Organization. U.S. stocks fell in Wednesday trading as investors fret over higher tariffs that could herald a trade war. The benchmark Dow Jones lost nearly 250 points to close Wednesday at 24,758. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A Guinean opposition leader vows more protests over local election results, even as two more people were shot dead Wednesday, allegedly by the police.
In terms of law, we cannot change the results now. But the only thing we can bring something of transparency is to continue our rally.
Sidia Touré is the leader of the Union of Republican Forces Party in Guinea. The UNHCR wants to deploy additional field workers to the Kenyan town of Moyale, where Ethiopian refugees have been fleeing. Ugandans hope their new police leadership can stem violence. And a Commonwealth Africa Summit focuses on youth, gender, and equality.
Frente a la cada vez mayor tolerancia a la desigualdad,
she said that in the face of the ever greater tolerance of inequality, we have to continue to cry out for equality.
That's VOA correspondent Henry Richwell in London interpreting the president of the Women for Africa Foundation. An employee of South Sudan's embassy here in Washington says he has not been paid for the last 18 months. And Africans travel to the South by Southwest Festival in Texas to network with other Africans. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A Guinean opposition leader is vowing more protest over local election results, even as two more people were shot dead Wednesday, allegedly by the police. Guineans voted in local elections on February 4 this year, which President Alpha Conde's ruling party said it won. There have been protests over the results, and two people were reportedly shot dead on Wednesday. Meanwhile, striking school teachers announced on Wednesday they were ending their slowdown after the government agreed to increase their salaries by 40%. Sidia Touré, the leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party, says the protest will continue because the government cheated in the local elections.
Really, that was a general cheating from the government, you know, for me and the other opposition parties. So we have people going on rallies, particularly every 2 or 3 days. It was very, very bad election, and we don't have a good commission for that. The administration is controlling everything. So, you know, we not absolutely agree the result we get for those elections. So the rally continues, not so huge now, but we continue to protest.
How did the opposition do in the local elections according to the results?
The result that will be released from the commission was people didn't get the majority. But we know that we did better than that. They have about 45%. But in our expectation, it will be really around 25 or 30% for the government.
What do you know about the report that at least two people were killed from these protests?
Today, I think one of the kids was killing again. So absolutely every 2 or 3 days, we think like that. This regime is absolutely a problem for us today.
There have been a teacher strike, but now we hear that the government has reached some kind of agreement with the teachers. What do you know about that?
They have to do it 3 months ago, but they spent so many time. Formally, president wants to discuss with people he wants. He doesn't want to recognize one part of the teachers. And yesterday we have an agreement because it was absolutely something important, because we have the rally of opposition today, and the teachers call for protest again. You know that Monday we have a huge protest in Conakry, particularly in downtown of Kaloum, and it was a situation really dangerous for the government. So they decide to give everything, you know. I don't know if they will respect this position for a long time, but from now they accept everything. So the strike is called off for the moment.
The government has promised to raise the salaries of the teachers, which they have been demanding. Do you believe that this will take place?
Absolutely. If not, the teachers will go on strike again. You know, this is the problem of the government, because we didn't do it. It was very bad discussion for them. They accept everything, and today they have to pay for it. It will be a very big bill for our budget, but this is Conde's regime.
What's next now in case of the local elections result? What's going to be happening?
So, you know, we continue the rally. We have last week a new meeting with National Commission. That was the election. But I think that was for just nothing, because in terms of law, we cannot change the result now. So the only thing we can bring something of transparency is to continue our rally.
There was also a strike in the mining towns of Boké and Kamsa. How is that?
Boké is my hometown. We have a big problem in that part of the country. So bad condition for the population. So every time those people are on strike or something like that, they have tests from bauxite in every part of all small city around this area. 500,000 people have problem with those exploitation, and they didn't get nothing from the government.
So the issue is that the people mining feel that they are not benefiting.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mr. Touré, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to talk with you always.
Thank you, James. Thank you so much.
Sidya Touré is the leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party in Guinea. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. Delegates from across Africa are attending the Commonwealth Africa Summit in London, where the theme this year is the common good. Topics under discussion include climate change and improving gender equality. The Commonwealth has its origins in the British Empire. Most members were former colonies. And as Henry Richwell reports from London, Britain is hoping to rekindle those ties as it leaves the European Union.
19 African countries are members of the Commonwealth, an organization that encompasses one-third of the world's population. The opening summit address was given by Maria Fernandez de la Vega, president of the Women for Africa Foundation.
Frente a la cada vez mayor tolerancia a la desigualdad,
she said that in the face of the ever greater tolerance of inequality, we have to continue to cry out for equality. She said the combination of young people and women together will allow us to take a new look at Africa. Issues like gender equality are being tackled by other institutions like the United Nations and the African Union. So what is the point of the Commonwealth? Sue Onslow is from the Institute for Commonwealth Studies at the University of London.
There is a general interest and value which is attached to the Commonwealth as a political imagination, to the access and networks that it offers, to possibilities of best practice, and to, indeed, emphasising communalities of working together.
Gambia was last month readmitted to the Commonwealth after a four-year absence following the democratic election of President Adama Barrow. Zimbabwe has indicated that it may apply to rejoin after it was suspended in 2002 following concerns over unfair elections. Caroline Campila, a Zimbabwean citizen living in London attending the conference, hopes Zimbabwe will soon be readmitted.
We've been isolated for such a long time, and we really want to be where other people are, where other nations are.
Interest in the Commonwealth has also revived in Britain, where the government hopes increased trade could help to make up for any losses after leaving the European Union. Again, analyst Sue Onslow.
Quite frankly, I find that idea laughable, because the Commonwealth is the antithesis, the very opposite of the EU as a bureaucratic trading bloc.
Nonetheless, Britain is aiming to strengthen ties when it hosts the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting next month, when the leaders of all 53 member nations will gather in London and at the Royal Family's residence at Windsor Castle. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 15th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's send shout-outs to listeners on Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 and a half minutes past the hour. United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees says it is ready to deploy additional field workers to the Kenyan town of Moyale, where Ethiopian refugees have been fleeing following last Saturday's killing, allegedly carried out by government forces. Yvonne Ndege, UNHCR spokesperson in Kenya, says the deployment is aimed at finding sustainable solutions to the crisis. She also says the UNHCR is working with the Kenyan government to secure legal protection for the 8,000 refugees it has identified.
The Kenya Red Cross Society has been supporting, you know, a large population of displaced persons from Ethiopia, most whom started streaming into Moyale sub-county in Marsabit County from Saturday. What we did immediately is to swing into action and at least provide the needed humanitarian support to these displaced populations that had gotten into Moyale. So we have 3,080 people at a place called Sisi. We have 2,300 people at a place called Sololo. We have 1,830 people from Mare. We also have another 890 people at a place called Sifa Butiye. We also have 300 people at a place called Mae. Then we have 91 people at Kuku. We have 51 people at Gata Koma. Then we also have 50 people at Dambala Fachana. So far, we've been running a number of interventions. This is food distribution, non-food distribution. We are also carrying out integrated medical outreaches. We are also doing health education because, issues of water, issues of sanitation, also health messaging. For the time being, also putting up temporary toilets, for use by this population. At the moment, our support is purely on humanitarian, basis. As you know, the work of the Kenya Red Cross is to actually alleviate human suffering and save lives. And therefore, our interventions are strictly on humanitarian basis. And as the number expected to rise in the coming days, we are also scaling up our interventions to ensure we're able to give adequate humanitarian support to these families. Right now, some tents have been pitched. Then you have some who are being hosted by their families because some had families there on the Moyale side. Most of the displaced population is coming from the border on the Ethiopian side. So you get more families on the Moyale side. Then others are also being hosted by friends. Others are being hosted by well-wishers. Then, of course, now we have the big tents where, we've been able to, pitch camp.
That was Yvonne Undege, spokesperson of the UNHCR in Kenya. Uganda's new police bosses have been given a new job to rebuild public confidence in an institution that has seen its image damaged by soaring crime. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala on the reshuffle of top officials in the National Police.
Unsolved matters, including those of a police boss, a state prosecutor, Muslim clerics and women, attacks on residents, robberies and the recent killings of foreigners in hotels. That is the crime scene in Uganda. Police corruption compounds the problem. With public frustration growing, President Yoweri Museveni last week named Okoth Martins Ochola as the Inspector General of Police, with Brigadier Sabiti Mzee as his deputy. The reshuffle came just a few days after the kidnap and brutal murder of a young woman whose captors warned her relatives not to call the police. One of the kidnappers was recorded saying, "We are working with the police and would know if the family sought help." This was just one of many cases in which police have been implicated in crime. Only a few officers have been held to account for criminal activities. The police also have been seen working with militias and criminal groups during police operations, thus discrediting investigations. One suspect, Juma Muirwa, confessed before journalists that many criminals work with the police. He says police in patrol cars protect him and his comrades, and they were taken to a rich man's house. When they got there, Muirwa says the police handed us pangas and told them to get to work, attacking the residents. The police protect them, he says. President Museveni last week said the police have long been infiltrated by criminals. With Ochola at the head of the force, many in Uganda now hope for greater security and accountability. He has been on the force 30 years and is seen as a disciplinarian. He also served as a legal officer, which may indicate more criminal investigations will go through proper procedures. His new deputy, Brigadier Mzee, comes from the military, where he had been commander of the military police. Despite the allegations of corruption, police spokesperson Emiliano Kaima says the force provides security for all Ugandans.
A few incidents that happen that probably even threaten all of us, they are bad enough. But this is not to say that we are in disarray. In the near future, the new team that comes, I'm sure will have a roadmap, and we shall see if there are gaps that have been exploited by this criminality. It will be purged, but we are here to serve.
However, political analyst Godbatum Mshabe says he expects little change.
I actually don't think that there's a change of guard. I think we are still at this exactly the same point, because the chief security person in this country is President Museveni. So as long as he's the president, commander-in-chief, the appointing authority, I doubt that any of these guys have the ability to transform the security architecture of this country.
For Ugandans, a new police administration focusing on the state will hopefully be reason enough to restore confidence in the police force. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
A South Sudanese-American working as a transport officer at the South Sudan Embassy here in Washington says he has not been paid for 18 months. Majok Luau says life is very difficult for him and other 13 local staff working at the embassy in Washington. Luau says he received threats from a senior diplomat at the embassy when he asked for his salaries.
I just come to Voice of America to voice my concern out for any citizen of South Sudan to hear it and American people to hear it, or anybody around the world to hear it. My concern is for the salary. We've been not paid for 12 months and a half.
You're saying you have not been paid for 12 months and a half. That's 1 year and 6 months. Is that correct?
Yes.
And how are you surviving?
I just run around because in America have opportunities. So I give myself not to have enough rest like sleeping. So I just sleep for 1 hour or 2 hours and do some other thing like a Uber or Lyft to support myself and my family.
Your job in the embassy is quite sensitive. You are in the transportation business and you must be running around. If you only sleep for 1 or 2 hours, how is that affecting your job at the embassy?
I decide to support my family. That's why I do that. I know according to the human health, it is not healthy for me. But I don't want my kids to struggle in the way I was. That's why I give myself in the danger zone so that my kid will enjoy this living.
After working for 1 year and 6 months without salaries, so what are the embassy officials telling you is the reason why you have not been paid?
They say we don't have money in the country and the country is in war now and we will fix and just hang on. And when we get the money, we will pay you. And it is quite a long time without getting paid.
My understanding is that this week the embassy paid its local staff. Is that correct?
Yes. The Ministry of Finance issued out 2 months' salary for every federal employee.
That is 2 months' salary for employees for embassies abroad?
Yes, for the embassies and the government officials back home. For the April 2017, and for the May 2017. And that money did not come as a 2 month. The only employees receive only 1 month, which is April. And the diplomat, including under secretary, receive 2 months.
I remember speaking to your deputy head of mission here, Ambassador Gordon Bai, who told me that it's not true that the embassy is not paying employees. He told me on record that the embassy is using the money they collect from visa to pay the local staff.
To be honest with you, Mr. John, I will put it in diplomatic way, saying that it is a police statement instead of saying ambassador was lying.
So you're telling me it's false statement?
Yeah, police statement. How come the ambassador say that he pay us? Even they were struggling to pay the rent for the office, the rent for the resident.
You're telling me that even the diplomats have difficulties paying their rents. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, like the office and the resident.
Who's resident?
The ambassador resident. The money that they collect, the house and the office. So sometimes they wait even to get the penalty. It is not my concern, but my concern is for my living. I receive a lot of conviction letters from my apartment.
If that is the situation you are in, why do you continue working with an employer who does not pay you?
Here in America, when you decide to quit the job, you quit the job for the reason. And when you quit the job, the company or the institution that you work for will give you whatever belongs to you, and you turn in whatever belongs to the company, and then you walk away and you leave the company. They told us to leave the embassy, and they don't want to pay us, which doesn't make sense.
Who told you to leave the embassy?
Ambassador say leave the embassy, and when you ask him that, okay, pay me for the whole month that I spend with you doing your job, and I will walk away. He replied, if you need your money, go to court, and we will meet in court.
That was Majok Luau, a transport officer at the South Sudan Embassy here in Washington. He spoke with reporter John Tanza. VOA South Sudan in Focus program contacted South Sudan Embassy Administrator Dumbel Yao Kuol for comments, but he declined, saying he needed permission from Juba. South by Southwest, or SXSW, is not just an annual music festival and technology conference in Austin, Texas. It also includes venues where people from specific countries or origin or regions of the world can gather to share ideas. This is the inaugural year for Africa House at South by Southwest, and it is providing valuable networking opportunities for Africans who come to experience and benefit from this electric festival. Viewers Elizabeth Lee reports from Austin.
From African musicians to African entrepreneurs.
It's a premium, handcrafted leather casual sneaker.
You'll find many gathered here at Africa House.
We've traveled all the way from Africa to meet Africa here and to meet people that we otherwise would never have had a chance to meet back home.
Brenda Katusije traveled from Uganda to talk about her startup Wazi Vision at Africa House. She says her frames made from recycled plastic are 80% cheaper than what's on the market.
We need people that are here that can sell them in their stores. We need people with online e-commerce platforms that can help with logistics and everything. I've made some really meaningful contacts that I plan on following up on.
And that is the purpose of Africa House, creating a platform to bring Africans to South by Southwest who would otherwise not be here. C.D. Glenn is with the U.S. African Development Foundation, one of the sponsors of Africa House.
They're coming here, to some extent, to network with the diaspora. These are Africans who are now living here in Austin and doing things at the local level, but also who are looking for a real connection back to Africa.
It's a network is to make more friends.
Musicians and entrepreneurs at Africa House
helping people benevolent
are also meeting members of the African diaspora from other U.S. cities, American investors, and other fellow Africans such as Bumi Akiamichu from Nigeria.
We look for new technologies, we look for new startups. So while we look for startups, that allows us to actually make investments in those startups that can collaborate with a parent company.
This was a place where they can make connections that they would otherwise not be able to make. So it was a long trip, but well worth it.
Glenn says this may be the first Africa House at South by Southwest, but it won't be the last. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Austin.
And that's it for this Thursday, March 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butter saying have a lovely day.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.